connecting commerce to your community. Bridgeport Regional Business Council President and CEO Dan Onofrio. Now on Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
Good morning, Dan. How are you this morning?
I'm good, Melissa. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Thank you so much, Dan. I appreciate it. I was curious. I wanted to get your thoughts on this because it's big business news. And I know Stratford and Bridgeport obviously are part of the Bridgeport Regional Business Council. What do you think about the military's decision not to hire Sikorsky to build their replacement of the Black Hawk helicopters?
Yeah, I had a feeling you were going to ask me about that.
Sorry. I mean, how can I not, right? I mean, I think it's a big blow to Connecticut personally. And now they're talking about laying off some people at the Stratford company.
Yeah, so, you know, ironically the news came late Monday evening into Tuesday morning yesterday, and ironically the BRBC was hosting about two dozen manufacturers up in Seymour. As you know, we've been talking a little bit on the show about our manufacturing partnership and supporting the manufacturing sector because they do employ a lot of people. I've mentioned it many times. It's, you know, that sector in the greater Bridgeport region and Fairfield County, you know, employees are well over 20,000 people. So when the news broke, that was definitely the topic of conversation yesterday's discussion with our manufacturers. And it's, you know, we're all very, very disappointed. I think we all felt very confident, with the news from Sikorsky and Boeing. As you know, they partnered with Boeing on this particular project, the Defiant X, to replace the Blackhawks. I think everyone felt really good. You know, it's new technology. It's innovative. Really would have put a stake in the ground for Sikorsky here in Connecticut related to the replacement of the Blackhawk. So hearing the news that the Army went with Bell out of Texas, I think, was a shock to a lot of people, including our federal and state legislators. You know, the feedback I got from their offices was the same. So, you know, short term, I don't know. You know, the word I'm getting from the folks at Lockheed and Sikorsky is, you know, short term, I don't think we're going to see much of a shift in employment because there's quite a bit of work still out there in terms of what they're doing with the Blackhawk and the other lines of production that they have. But I think there will be an impact. I think they've alluded to that longer term, you know, as the current Blackhawk sunsets, that definitely there's going to be a shift, I think, in employment. What that number looks like, I don't think anybody really knows right now. I don't even know if Sikorsky knows. But there's some other opportunities. I think there are some highlights there. I know they have a couple bids out related to a scout using the same technology or similar technology, using the Defiant X technology that you're referring to. Some other smaller projects, you know, not at the volume of production, but some other aircraft that they're looking at producing and bidding on with the military. So, I think it's wait and see. You know, I think that the outside of the employment with Sikorsky, you know, there's a rippling effect, right? I mean, these people that work there, you know, they spend money, they work and live in the region, they spend money locally. So I think there's a little bit of a rippling effect, not just through the supply chain that supports Sikorsky, but, you know, the restaurants and the retailers and everybody else that supports, you know, the folks that live and work in the region. So, you know, there is a bit of a rippling effect, and I know the state of Connecticut is very supportive of Lockheed and our delegation, you know, with Rosa DeLauro and Congressman Hines and Blumenthal. I know they've all advocated for seeing what we can do. I think there's a small window of opportunity where they can actually appeal this decision. I don't know whether they'll do that or not. I'm sure they need to see how this decision came about. But it's unfortunate. You know, I think it's a little bit of a blow, you know, and then we heard right after that, you know, Black & Decker shutting down their Hartford Innovation Center. So it's like, you know, yesterday was a little bit of a downer. You know, it started
raining. I'm sure it was. No, I'm sure it was, Dan, and understandably so. I mean, I was shocked. I think it wasn't that long ago that we extended the contract for Sikorsky to stay here in Connecticut under the idea that we were going to get tax breaks because they were going to land some incredible, no pun intended, land some incredible deals with the military. And this was, I just don't think anyone saw this coming. And it's not a matter of if Sikorsky missed the mark. It seems like the Army is just going in a totally different direction. That's what it kind of seems like.
Yeah, it almost feels like, you know, this is just me speaking. I'm not speaking for anyone here when I say this, but I feel like they're going with a safer technology, a technology that's been, you know, Bell's been using this technology with their airlift program that they currently have, whereas the Defiant X is newer technology. It's innovative, like I said earlier. And, you know, I think this Defiant X project, I think Sikorsky's confident that it's going to be transformational in our military services. You know, where it fits in with other projects and other bids, it remains to be seen. I know they've alluded, I think, in some of the articles and even a brief conversation I had with some opportunities in Europe, too, to use this technology. I think they stand behind it, knowing that it is probably, you know, some of the best technology that you're going to find out there as it relates to our aircraft. So, I think we'll see it in some other capacities and some other ways, you know. Hopefully there's an opportunity to win back this particular project. But I guess, like I said, time will tell and see where they end up going with it.
That was going to be my question, Dan, because I know you are in touch with Sikorsky and Lockheed Martin. I was wondering if they have any if they're feeling hopeful that even layoffs could be avoided if this technology is picked up, if not here in America, in other countries. But it sounds like they are looking at other opportunities to be able to use Defiant elsewhere, maybe.
Yeah, I think so. You know, I think they have to just see where they can innovate and leverage the technology. You know, it's pretty impressive. You know, I saw a couple of, like, their video demos that they did. And, man, it's incredible just how fast technology changes. And, you know, we never want to talk about war and all this stuff. But, you know, the reality is I think future wars are going to be it's not going to be the combat that we're used to and remember from World War II and Vietnam and all that stuff. It's going to be very tech-driven, you know, and whether it's drone technology. And so I think Sikorsky and Lockheed has a bleeding-edge project here. And so I'm pretty sure, you know, again, I'm not an expert in this, but I'm pretty sure this technology is going to find its way somewhere in some project somewhere. Hopefully Lockheed and Sikorsky will win that project and will mitigate the loss of the replacement on the Blackhawks, you know, and hopefully one of our other military services takes it on in some kind of project as well. So, I don't think all is lost, certainly. And like I said, the messages I've been getting from Lockheed is they stand behind the technology, they stand behind Defiant X. They know it meets and exceeds all the requirements that the Army was looking for. So, I think there'll be alternatives for them.
So it's the big news this week. One of the big headlines, the military decided not to hire Sikorsky to build the replacement for the Black Hawk helicopter for the Army. And now a lot of businesses are pretty worried out there. Dan Onofrio is here, the president and CEO of the Bridgeport Regional Business Council. I just wanted to know sort of your thoughts on this, Dan, because I can understand the ripple effect when you've got a company, for example. There was like a deli that was quoted in Hearst Media saying 30% of my clients are from Sikorsky. And of course, they're worried about layoffs, which we are already anticipating, not in the near future, but in several years down the road when Blackhawks don't need to be made anymore. So what do you suggest companies do? You know, what should they be feeling this morning, in your professional opinion?
Well, you know, yes, anytime there's news like this and it has a long-term impact on the employment in your region, you know, it's going to impact, you know, businesses, both large and small, no doubt. I think the silver lining, though, is that all of our manufacturers in the region are all hiring. So I think, you know, there's opportunity there for people, you know, if there are some layoffs. I think there's opportunity there. I think you've heard me say on the show a number of times that, you know, we don't have enough people to fill the jobs that we have. Yesterday in our manufacturing conversation with our manufacturers, yeah, they're all looking for top talent. So I think the opportunity to keep our employment numbers up are there, no doubt. That said, you know, when you talk locally here, you know, you look at all the apartments that are going up and the businesses that support all the folks that are living in these apartments, you know, sure, there's going to be a shift in spending habits, you know, just like we saw with the pandemic. You know, these things are the bumps in the road that, you know, businesses need to navigate. And, and it's like anything else. If you have got a product or a service that's good, you know, people are going to continue to go there. So I think, you know, for the smaller businesses, whether it's that deli or that coffee shop, you know, I think if they're providing good service, you know, people will continue to to patronize their places of business, regardless of where they work. So, you know, short term, I think, you know, it's business as usual. Longer term, like everything else, you know, you navigate the way the economy's going. And, you know, and you leverage resources like the BRBC and our chambers to help fill any gaps or any voids that might exist within their businesses. That's what we're here to do. So, you know, I don't think it's all doom and gloom, certainly, just because I sense that there's a need for top talent. So whether it's they're getting employed through Sikorsky or one of the supporting agencies that fit their supply chain, or the small chemical manufacturer that's in Stratford, Connecticut, you know, after research, they're always looking for top talent. You know, Microboard up in Oxford, or I'm sorry, Seymour, you know, they're looking for 20 people right now. So there's jobs out there for these folks.
Mm-hmm. And you do feel like the ripple effect with Sikorsky is not going to heavily impact these local restaurants, delis, eateries, shops, you know, whoever is directly benefiting from Sikorsky?
Certainly not short term. You know, I think, you know, what'll happen is Sikorsky has, you know, they get a little bit more visibility into what the long-term projections are going to be. You know, they might cut down on their spending. I know they do a lot of catering with the area businesses throughout the Valley and greater Bridgeport. So, you know, you might see some, you know, they may not be buying all the sandwiches at Super Sandwich, you know, for certain meetings and things of that nature. They might look to cut back here and there. But I don't think, you know, consumer spending is going to change too much as it relates to this particular decision that will impact the region. I mean, there's no doubt it'll have an impact. Mm-hmm. What it looks like, I think, remains to be seen. And will it have a ripple effect? 100%. It's just, I don't think it's going to be all doom and gloom.
Well, Dan Onofrio, I really appreciate getting your professional insight on this, especially with the Bridgeport Regional Business Council. And I know that you do business with both Sikorsky and Lockheed Martin. So thank you. I really do appreciate your time this morning. And I look forward to chatting with you again really soon.
You got it, Melissa. Have a great day. Okay.
Thanks, Dan. You too. According to PETA, by the time we get to January, most of the animals that are presents for our children or family members join more than 6 million other animals who have entered shelters in the United States every single year. It's so important that you're thoughtful in adopting a pet from a shelter this holiday season, or just buying a pet, and really thinking about if this is the right fit for your family, and not just having that picture perfect moment of the animal under the tree, but really understanding the responsibility you're taking on and if that pet is a good fit for your family. Joining us this morning, I'm very honored to have Jennifer Wallace here, who's with Animal Control in Bridgeport. Good morning, Jennifer. Thanks for being here. So, Jennifer, first of all, talk to us a little bit about the holidays. What do you typically see pre and post holiday season in Connecticut?
So the holidays is always a concern for anybody in animal rescue, animal welfare. We see an uptick of animals available to be purchased. And then, of course, when you get into January, February, especially the smaller pets, people forget about them, too. It's not always a puppy under the tree. It's a rabbit or a guinea pig, hamsters, and unfortunately, we're seeing a lot of abandoned reptiles, things like turtles and ball pythons. So, you know, just because it's for sale doesn't mean that, you know, it's going to be an easy pet. You know, people don't think of the long-term commitment that goes into these animals that are readily available right around the holiday season.
And I will personally admit that my son desperately wanted a cat. Desperately wanted a cat. And we went through a whole process of adopting, obviously, from a shelter. And we looked around. We, you know, looked for a good pair. And we ended up with a cat who just did not. I don't know if she didn't like the vibe of our house. She had been around children. She had been around dogs. So, you know, on paper, she looked good. But when we brought her home, she only lasted with us about 3 weeks. And it was one of the most devastating things my son had gone through, because it was that idea of, oh, this is from Santa. Santa made me this cat. This cat was literally made for me. And yet the cat couldn't stand him. The cat hated our dogs. The cat would, you know, scratch at my husband, was just very aggressive. And it was very sad. We had to find another family. And instead of putting her back in a shelter, we did find another family who, you know, loved cats, and they were, you know, just them, no kids, no other pets. And she's doing great. The cat is doing great.
Well,
but,
it sounds like you were really responsible in rehoming your pet. And
well, we were lucky.
Something that
right.
we really appreciate here.
Well, we were lucky. That's the thing, though, Jen, is I think we were really lucky, and a lot of other people, I will say, fall into our category where, again, the intention wasn't bad. We've had cats. My husband and I have grown up with cats and dogs. We have four animals in our house. So we absolutely would never take in an animal that we didn't thoughtfully want. And I do think there are people like that. But the idea of, oh, my gosh, how magical would it be that our kid wakes up to a pet? We made the wrong choice. It was not a good idea. It really wasn't. It's one of the things I regret, absolutely, every single day that I did that.
Well, I mean, it's one of those things, too, where you might do everything right, and some people do end up in a bad situation. And we have animals available for adoption that come from situations like that. We have animals available for adoption that come from people that didn't take the time to think through the commitment to an animal, whether that's the housing commitment or the financial commitment, space, time, energy. A lot more goes into an animal than people think when they think, well, the adoption fee is X amount of money. Mm-hmm. It goes from there. That is the baseline, the bottom of it. That's just where it starts. And so, you know, we've seen an uptick of abandoned animals throughout the year this year. 2022 has been hard for anybody in animal welfare. But what we're really hoping we don't see is an additional surge as we go into January and February, specifically from holiday pets. And you'd hope, you know, people kind of are perceiving that now, like maybe pets aren't the best thing, like you said, to put under a tree. But it's still out there and it's pervasive, and it's one of those things that if it's available, it's still going to happen.
Jennifer Wallace is here with Animal Control in Bridgeport. Jennifer, you had mentioned before that you guys have seen, even beyond just the dogs and the cats, you guys have seen a lot of different animals being disregarded
yeah.
and ending up in shelters. What are you finding in the last year? What's happening?
So we're seeing a lot of, like I said, some people will call these things pocket pets, or think about what's available at like your local Petco. You see guinea pigs, hamsters, and you have a reptile section, ball pythons, geckos, things like that. In the past, maybe 3 months, I've had two ball pythons that I actually ended up fostering because I happen to love reptiles.
Wow.
We see a lot of bunnies, a lot of rabbits. People don't understand the care that goes into rabbits. And those are abandoned year-round. This isn't just an after Easter thing for them, though we also worry about rabbits that time of year. Guinea pigs. So we're seeing that. We're also seeing types of dogs that I never used to see here before. We kind of had a demographic of dogs that we would get, and now all of that has been blown out of the water. We're getting younger dogs, older dogs that we wouldn't typically see. We're getting purebred dogs that we wouldn't typically see, or breeds that I hadn't seen here before. So if you are looking for a pet, you know, check out your local shelter. It's, you know, we've got a lot of different things that, you know, maybe in past years you wouldn't expect to see here.
What do you think is going on, Jennifer? Do you think it's because animals have gotten so expensive? Do you think it's that people just really aren't caring? Because I thought Connecticut overall really was like a pet-loving state. At least I grew up kind of knowing it was like that.
No, it absolutely is. And when you compare us to certain other, you know, cultures around animal care, we certainly don't believe in outside dogs or anything like that. That's not the general public feeling. But I think there's a lot of pressure going on now. I think that, you know, with housing getting so expensive, if you have to choose between, you know, a place to live that will accept pets and won't accept pets, and you can only afford the place that won't accept pets, you're going to choose a place with a roof over your head. I think that everything is so expensive. It's not mm-hmm. just the animals themselves. It's the cost of care. It's the cost of food. It's the cost of feeding yourself. Every time I go to the grocery store, I feel like I'm spending three times as much to get half as much food,
so
you know? So
mm-hmm.
We are empathetic to the pressures that are out there, but we want to make sure that when people are looking to rehome their animals, they're in that situation, that they do it responsibly. So leaving an animal in the winter in a tank that's, you know, a cold-blooded reptile, not a responsible way to rehome your pet. And we are seeing things like that where the callousness is, it's more common than we'd like to admit.
That's terrible. So we're talking to Jennifer Wallace this morning with Animal Control in Bridgeport. And on a little bit of a lighter note, what can be done to help the shelter? I know growing up, one of the things that I always loved was, you know, my parents always said, you know, you have to give back. You got to find where you want to give back. And I'll never forget my younger sister at a very, very young age, might I add, you know, had said, I like animals more than people. My parents were like, fine, whatever, that's fine. And so she for years would always, you know, would always encourage my parents, oh, it seems like the dogs put a tear in this bed. We got to donate it. And my parents would be like, that's a brand new bed. But I mean, what are some things that you are looking for at the shelter for these animals? Because a lot of times we're thinking monetary, which is great, but are you looking for certain items that could be really helpful as we're really seeing overflowing animals, you know, at animal control offices?
Yeah, so we're feeling the pinch in a bunch of different ways. Like we had been talking about, our intake is up, but with intake being up, our free community pet food pantry that we've had for several years now, we sustain literally on donations only, and those donations have dwindled due to, like I said, financial constraints and pressure. If people don't have the extra to, you know, throw a couple extra bags of dog food into their cart, they don't. But what's happening is we're seeing the demand for that type of help to the community and our community pets go up and the supply go way down. So if you find yourself in a position where you can, when you're grocery shopping, throw in a bag of dry dog food or dry cat food. Those are the two, you know, things that we absolutely need and can't seem to keep in good supply. That's very helpful because you're not just helping the pets here at the shelter. You're helping our community overall. And when you help our community, you help keep pets in homes. You know, when somebody's going, I can't feed this dog this month because I am in between jobs or I had a very unexpected bill, you know, the awful check engine light, what have you. And they can come to the shelter and they can, you know, sign up and get a bag of dog food to get them through that month. That means that dog that is a loved dog in a home now does not need a new home. They're not considering rehoming their dog because they had a rough patch. We're able to kind of bridge that gap for them and keep dogs in homes. And that's what keeps dogs out of shelters. That's what helps the community overall. So if you're able to do that, it can be a small bag, a large bag, but dry dog food, dry cat food.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good point. And again, Jennifer Wallace, I really appreciate you for coming on, for the work that you do, and for sharing all of this with WICC listeners, especially ahead of the holidays. Thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. And of course, you're welcome back anytime. That is Jennifer Wallace with Animal Control in our city of Bridgeport here on WICC. Well, the State Commission on Fire Prevention and Control is urging residents to keep themselves safe from fires this holiday season. And it's really fitting that we're having the Red Cross on this morning because I've got to be honest with you, John Godin, who's back this morning. John, I've been seeing so many press releases from the Red Cross. It seems like you guys are very, very busy in these last couple of weeks. So we're already starting to see, unfortunately, those house fires happening more and more across Connecticut. Good morning. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having us, Melissa, as always.
So I know home fires, they can happen really at any time, but generally we do see an increase, right, John, during the fall and winter, especially December and January?
Yeah, we do. People are coming inside, they're cooking more, they're building fires in fireplaces if they have them. And, you know, the holiday season makes a lot of activities towards decorating homes. That also includes candles. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, home fires involving candles typically happen a lot in December. So we want to make sure that people are aware that we want you to enjoy the holidays, but be safe when decorating your home and getting together with family.
So it's interesting because around Thanksgiving, everybody's really concerned, of course, about the kitchen and cooking and the chaos there. But it is true, as soon as it feels like December 1st is here, we start to see people put up lights. We start to see the space heaters come out. We start to see more decoration, more extension cords. So tell us, if you don't mind, what does the Red Cross offer as far as things that people should be doing when it comes to decorating their homes, even if people have already put their trees up? What should they go back and just double check to make sure that they don't have a fire in their homes this season?
Well, there's a few things we have for tips for folks, specifically as it relates to candles. I mean, all of us, a lot of us love putting candles in our homes. However, if you put them in your homes and don't keep them away from pets and children, that could be a problem. So we're trying to tell people, make sure you put candles out before you go to bed, leave the house, make sure they're in an area that aren't close to flammable materials like curtains, right? Stuff like that. The other thing is, if you have artificial trees, make sure they have a fire-resistant label so that you know if something happens in the home, they do resist fires. Also, if you have a live tree, make sure the tree is properly watered and fresh. And if you are going out to pick a tree, make sure you can bend the needles back and forth. If they fall off, they tend to be overly dry. You probably want to get a tree that's more fresh.
Another really quick on that, John. Hold on one second.
Yeah.
So with the fresh trees, how often would you say that you should be watering the tree?
I've had fresh trees. I have an artificial now that is fire resistant. I've had fresh trees. And the guidance I always tell people, water them every day. Make sure that that water bowl you have at the bottom is always replenished. That keeps the tree pretty fresh through the holiday season, and that's the guidance that we would give to anyone.
And as far as, you know, if you see that the water is not going down, you know, but maybe the needles are not showing that they're coming off right away, because I know what you're talking about. When a tree is dry, those needles just come off if you tap it. I always find that's a good sign for me is when my dog walks by and the tail hits the tree, if a whole thing of needles dumps on the floor, I'm like, oh, that's got to go. But is there anything that we should be looking for in the water as well? You know, like if the water's not dropping every day or every couple of days, should you probably imagine that the tree is not taking in water, that it's dying?
That I would not know, that I can't comment on. One thing I do recommend people do, though, is when they put their tree up as well, make sure it's not near a heat source like a fireplace, because that could also cause an issue with the tree if it's too close to a fireplace. You know, I think as a consumer, you have to, you know, when you're choosing a product, when you're buying a tree, look for the most fresh you can and water it as often as you can. That's the best advice we can give folks.
Okay, definitely. And again, we're talking to John Godin this morning of the American Red Cross Connecticut chapter. Didn't want to interrupt you, John, but continue on with your list of things that people should be doing while they decorate their home. Just wanted to ask those questions about the live trees.
Yeah, you mentioned light cords. So obviously a lot of us will put up decorations around the house that includes extension cords. Make sure you don't overload a circuit with more than, say, three cords. Another thing you want to do is check for frayed cords. If cords are frayed, discard them and get new cords. A lot of people don't realize they could be frayed from age, or they could be frayed from teeth from a cat or a dog. That's things that you have to keep in mind. Another thing that people don't realize is if you have a metal artificial tree, you should not be putting electric lights on that artificial metal tree. That's something you have to be concerned about. The other, you know, typical, and this is not even a holiday tip, this is a year-round tip, make sure you have smoke alarms in your home on each level in the home and test those smoke alarms monthly. Again, that has nothing to do with the holiday season, but it's just another good tip that we recommend to folks to make sure the alarms in your home are active and ready to go in the event of a fire. The last major thing, if you think about the holidays, we tend to have a lot of people visit for the holidays, and that's what the holidays are all about. However, God forbid there is a fire in the home, make sure that your family has a escape plan to leave the building, to leave the home within 2 minutes. Because if a fire does start in a home, that's all it takes for the fire to fully engulf the property.
Mm-hmm.
So make sure everyone is aware of the escape route out of the property itself.
Mm-hmm. I was not joking. I don't want to say I was joking this morning, John, but when I was talking about, we got our tree last week and we always cut down a fresh tree for our house. And as soon as the tree goes up, I don't know if it's because I've worked in news and I've seen so many of those displays by fire departments where the tree goes up in literally seconds and it takes not even minutes for your whole house to now follow. I have like anxiety attacks. So my husband, you know, makes sure that he unplugs the tree before, you know, he goes to do anything at night because I go to bed so early for this job. And the other thing that we do every year is we come up with our fire plan, with our fire escape. And we went over it this year, actually, with my four-year-old. It was like the first time that I was like, hey, you know, we don't expect to have a fire, but if something were to happen, this is where we're going. And I kind of joked this morning. I said, we even sat down with our dogs and we showed them where the escape route was. But we did. I did show them, like, you know, not that my dogs understand what I'm saying, but I'm like, you can always go out this way. You can always go out this way. But it's important that you've got that plan and that you talk to anybody who needs to hear it in that household at the time, that if God forbid there's a fire, this is how we're getting out.
Yeah, it's important. And it's not something that you want to think about, because when they do happen, it really happens quickly.
It does.
It almost has to be instinctive, mm-hmm. right? And it oftentimes may happen when you're asleep. So if you're asleep and it's happening and the alarms are going off, it's not like you're fully oriented at 2 and 3 in the morning. So you really have to be prepared at that point to put your plan in place.
It's very true. And John, I know this December, as more people make travel plans to celebrate with their family and friends, the American Red Cross is still looking for donors to set aside some time for giving blood or platelets to patients waiting for care over the holidays. Do you mind just sharing with folks how they can go about making an appointment and how they can find out where they can give blood today?
Yeah, we have there are three basic places that you can find information on giving blood. You can look on the Red Cross Blood Donor app on a phone. A lot of people love using their smartphones to look for information. A lot of people will have tablets or work on a laptop at home. You can look through redcrossblood.org for information on that, or handy, the old style way, 1-800-RED-CROSS. I think what people need to realize is, regardless of the time of year, every 2 seconds, someone in this country needs blood. Yet only 3% of the population gives blood.
Wow.
And during the busy holiday season, everyone has distractions because they're enjoying the holiday season, they're seeing family, they're traveling, and their schedules are extremely busy. That impacts how many people have the ability to spend the time to give blood. So what we're encouraging people who give or are considering giving, schedule that time now over the next 4 weeks or so to give, so that we can maintain that regular blood supply in case someone who is sick or injured or needs that blood during the holiday season, it's available to them then.
And I do know that right now the Red Cross, thanks to Amazon partnering up with them, if you go and give blood now until December 15th, you will get a $10 Amazon.com gift card via email, thanks to Amazon and the Red Cross. So please be sure to go to redcrossblood.org or, again, call 1-800-RED-CROSS. And, of course, there is the Red Cross Blood Donor app as well. John, always a pleasure to chat with you. Thank you so much. And we'll be talking in the new year. So have a wonderful holiday with your family, and I'll talk to you next year.
You as well, Melissa. Always a pleasure. Take care.
The same way. Thank you so much, John.